Welcome to the BCMA Podcast. It's back to school week at the BCMA, and we're sharing ideas, tips, and resources for museums as they think about how to continue engaging with schools and teachers during the COVID-19 pandemic. In today's podcast episode, we're joined by Tom Searby. Tom majored in English and History at Wilfrid Laurier University and created a bachelor's degree of education at Nipissing University. He taught grades 8 through 12 in Ontario and British Columbia and has worked as a museum educational programmer at the Dune Heritage Village in Waterloo, Ontario. He currently resides in Smithers, BC and teaches food studies, woodshop, and senior social studies at Houston Secondary School in Houston, BC. Today, Tom will be giving us a teacher's perspective on how museums can support schools during the most unpredictable back-to-school season in our lifetimes. Today, we're joined by Tom Searby with School District 54 in Northern BC. Tom's going to be chatting with us about some ways museums can better support educators and classrooms during this time of COVID and beyond. So thank you so much for joining us today, Tom.
It's wonderful to be joining you.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, Tom, because you have some interesting experience that combines both in-classroom education, but also museum education.
Yeah, so I had the privilege of being an education programmer at the Waterloo Region Museum just after I graduated from Teachers College, actually. And I was doing costume historical interpretation, as well as doing education programs for various schools in the area. And we offered a variety of different types of programs that were actually related to seasonal stuff. And then it wasn't just history. We actually provided science lessons as well. And it was one of these amazing experiences that kind of showed me just like the range of how museums can provide educational programming to schools and not just have it be history focused. I also had the benefit of being married to a museum curator, and I have been in that world as well for a number of years. And so I've got a unique sort of look at how museums are run and the struggles that they are currently facing due to the pandemic. And then for the last 4 years, I've been a full-time teacher here in the Bulkley Valley at School District 54, mainly the two high schools. So yeah, it's been interesting for me, and I think I have a unique kind of outlook on what's going on right now.
And we're all going through a period of massive uncertainty right now with the COVID-19 pandemic. And something we've been getting questions about from our members is how museums can continue to work with schools and teachers throughout and beyond the pandemic, whether that's providing new online resources, whether that's Zoom field trips, whether that's even new forms of engagement that we haven't previously considered. As someone who's thinking about going back to the classroom in a few days, really, how do you see the role of museums as a supporter for your work?
I think that there definitely is still a place for museums to help support teachers. I'm going to try and avoid saying during this time as much as possible, because if I hear one more commercial start by saying that, I might throw my TV out the window. But I think that museums really do have a support role to play. I think that the nature of that may just change. Students saying back in March and April, how long did I think that this was going to last before things went back to normal? And I think my answer back then used to be, oh, hopefully soon, but we don't really know. And that's a question that I think some museums are asking. And I think it may be more prudent to say that's not really the right question to ask at all. I think the question is what you said, how do we go forward? How do we continue with this new reality? And I don't really see in the foreseeable future classrooms going into many museums, just based on what I've heard. I know that a lot of museums, just based on social distancing measures, are generally saying that they will not, some are saying that they will not be welcoming school groups in physically. And I don't see any sort of way around that. And that's upsetting to me, because I believe that the taking of a class to a museum, it has a measurable effect on students. I think it makes them more creative. I think it helps to develop things like empathy and understanding, and it helps to foster that sort of important skill of critical thinking. Even if the class isn't coming to the museum, I think the museum can still play an important role. And I think that's probably going to be virtually, because I think that what the museum has to offer is still really important. I think the sort of way that they can influence the way students think about historical events is still going to be really important. And it's going to be up to the museum to come up with a way to do that virtually.
Thank you, Tom. That's really interesting to hear, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. Do you mind sharing a few effective ways that museums can reach out and communicate with teachers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the best ways going forward is probably, I'll put it this way. Right now, I think every single teacher is so focused on trying to figure out how this, you know, new term is going to work, how this new school year is going to work, that I think effective communication between teachers and museums is going to be a little bit difficult right now. But I think going forward, and given the time where teachers are able to get their routines going, once I think students have settled into this new reality, I think one of the best ways going forward, we have been told that our professional development days are basically going to be continuing this year. And those are usually Fridays, sometimes once a month, where there's no classroom for students, but teachers are still in the buildings, and we're beginning to look at professional development. And I think that museums reaching out to school districts, specifically to the professional development representatives, each school and each district usually has people who are responsible for finding speakers or events or programs that teachers can sign up for and participate in to sort of further their own development. And I think that would be a really great way, because that's the opportunity for teachers and museums to work together to maybe come up with a program that would benefit both parties. It's a nice thing to think about that during those times. It's an opportunity for the sort of the museum to get and say, here's what we're able to offer. And teachers are able to respond back and say, okay, let's develop something that we can do with teachers and then implement in the classrooms. I always just say, if you have a local museum, if you're a local museum and you've got a couple different schools in your town or your city, wherever you are, reach out to your teachers, reach out to your history departments directly and open the lines of communication. Just see if there's sort of any sort of way that you can support the teachers, ask them what they're currently working on. And I know that for our personal experience that the museum here often reaches out, letting teachers know what programs are being offered, et cetera. And I think if museums are looking for a way to communicate with teachers, I think that's just a really good way to do it. It's just to just physically reach out, see if you can get a line of communication going. It's just nice to think that museums during this struggle are looking for ways to help support teachers. And I'm sure that teachers are looking for resources and ways that they could enhance their own classrooms going forward as well.
Well, and speaking about how teachers can enhance the resources in their classroom, right now, I think it's fair to say that everyone is thinking about how they can create online resources, whether that's museums, artists, teachers. There's been debates about whether synchronous resources or asynchronous resources are more effective for teaching and learning. And as you think about the realities of going back to your classroom, and who knows, maybe going back to online teaching at some point in the next year, what are some ideas you have for how museums can make their online resources fit more easily into a school environment and be more useful for classrooms?
That's a really nice question, because I think if you talk to any teacher at the end of last year, when the online world was the forced reality on all of us, when we had to pull back away from our physical classrooms, there were some teachers who really struggled with moving to that online setting. And I come from a sort of a large family of teachers, and I have one aunt in particular who's been a teacher for almost 40 years. And I think she said that if they went back to an online setting, she would take early retirement, because it's tough. It's very difficult. I think a lot of teachers pride themselves on being able to connect with their students. And part of the way that we normally do that is by physically being in the classroom with them. And so online resources becoming such an important tool for us right now, I think it's really important that we make sure that the resources that we are using do fit effectively into classes. And someone once noted to me that the internet has obliterated the authority of educators. And that kind of really stuck with me, because students are so regularly bombarded with online information. And a lot of that information is great, and some is intended to intentionally deceive, and we all know about trolling and things like that. So I think it's really important that whatever resources you're using online, that they they sort of fit into making sure that students are thinking critically. And if we're looking at it from a history perspective specifically, I think it's really important to make sure that we are teaching students to think critically about historical thinking concepts. And I think one of the things that we call it now is like the Big Six. That's one of the books that came out, and it's really inferred how we have developed curriculum in the last couple of years. And that's just helping students become effective thinkers about history. So if I'm talking to a museum and they're looking to provide activities, digital exhibits, primary source materials, anything like that to teachers, I would really like to see that those things are specifically designed to help fit into that curriculum sort of guideline, that they clearly outline how it's going to be related to curriculum or to what I'm trying to achieve in my classroom. So an example to me might be something like, if you have a package of primary sources, seeing specifically that it's designed to say, hey, this is going to help your students with primary source evidence, or maybe examining continuity and change in history. Because when I can see those types of terms relating to the historical thinking concepts, I can see how I can fit it more easily into my curriculum. I would also say that online resources can fit more easily into the school environment if it's conscientious of time constraints. And I myself have, you know, gone online and found some online resources that I like and I enjoy and I think they would work, but they quite often don't take into consideration sort of time constraints. And this is one of the things that people often struggle with. If you've never actually been in a classroom in front of students, and depending on what age level you're talking about, you can have the most excellent lesson plan sitting in front of you, and students will always find a way to challenge your lesson plans, because getting students situated, you never know, maybe there's some announcements that need to be made or discussions that need to happen. Maybe you're taking up some questions from homework or something from the day before. You may plan the most perfect activity to fit into an hour-long lesson or time period, and you may find that 10 minutes in, it gets completely derailed by questions or concerns. So I think one thing that museums can do to make their online resources fit into that school environment is just be aware of time constraints and make sure that if you're providing some material or an activity, maybe have it designed in a way that it fits into a 45 or an hour long lesson, and that it's not something that you're necessarily to pick up the next day, because we often find that assignments or activities that sort of stretch over multiple days can sometimes be tough for students who don't always have maybe the best retention. So I think time restraints is an important one. I would say maybe the last thing I might mention is designing resources that keep in mind various learning needs of students. Because if there's one thing that I've learned over the years, is that no two students really learn alike. They're never really the same. Some students learn best by sitting down and reading the information themselves. Others learn best by watching or listening to either a video. It really are those kinesthetic learners that learn best by getting hands-on. And that's one of the struggles of teachers, is, you know, to design something that reaches all of those students and those learning styles. And if you want to make an online resource that teachers can use effectively, make sure that it's done in a way that includes not just text, but images, maybe videos. If there's a way to, I know that there are some museums that are doing like take-home fossil kits, or they provide the materials and you can design something in your own home. Having something tactile that students can interact with as well to be something that's really effective in reaching all those different types of learners. One of the things that I think students get frustrated with museums is sometimes they say, oh, it's so much to read, and they tend to ignore some of that information presented to them. And so you have to make sure that you are presenting the information in a way that relates to them, and it's done in a way that it doesn't overload them as well. And that's challenging. It's challenging for teachers. So I don't imagine that it's going to be a walk in the park for museum curators or education programmers. But that's why I think that it's important to have this relationship between teachers and museums, that museums can provide that information and teachers can provide that information to help make sure that the resources work effectively in classrooms.
I'm so happy to hear you say primary sources, because that actually pretty much leads into my next question, because my next question was other things, an example like expertise, primary sources, artifacts, speakers, etc., that you wish you had more access to. And I feel like you touched on that with your previous answer, but is there anything more in particular that you wish you could have more access to that museums might be able to provide for you?
I guess the short answer to that is everything. Having those people who can speak to those things, our artifacts, professional speakers who are, you know, experts in certain fields, those are all amazing. That's why we bring students to museums, because museums offer something that you just can't get in the classroom. And again, speaking from a history perspective, you need those primary source materials to make history, I think, come alive in a lot of ways. And that's for so many different age groups. I'm not just talking about high school. I mean, all the way down to the youngest students first learning social studies. I remember when I was doing education program coordination, my favorite program that we held was called the Historical Treasure Chest. And we had the students gather around in this century-old barn with a covered wagon, and they would sit on hay bales. It was like perfect little environment for it. And we had this old travel trunk with us. And inside, there were all of these different primary sources in the form of artifacts. And these were actual primary source materials that students could interact with. They could hold them, and they could formulate their own theories about what were these objects, what were they used for, and the creativity that we would have students coming up with. I distinctly remember we had a tin candle maker. So it was basically hollow forms that you would pour the wax into to form candles. It was this terrifying looking artifact. And the number of times I could almost guarantee there was always one other young boy or girl who would put it on their shoulder and claim it was like a missile launcher or a bazooka. And that was always just so much fun to see them try and figure out for themselves what exactly these artifacts were. But what was amazing about it was that they had their own ideas about what these things are. And then when you told them, they still enjoyed it. Like, it didn't shatter the dream of what these things were. Telling them what it physically was and then showing them how they were used was something that fascinated them, because it was so different from the time that they've, you know, sort of lived in. And so I wish I had more opportunities for students to get hands-on with history, to physically interact with objects from the past, or even people from the past. I've had great success bringing speakers in who've been able to talk about certain events, and it's much more difficult to do now, but I distinctly remember having conversations with my own grandfather about his experience in the Second World War, and the way that shaped my own understanding of those events. And not only did it shape sort of my understanding of history, but it also changed the relationship that I had with my grandfather. And being able to speak with people about events of the past has always, to me, been such a wonderful way to engage with history. And it helps to make it more real for students. And I think if museums find a way to bring those primary sources, those artifacts or speakers into a classroom, whether digitally or physically, I think that just benefits everyone. Because engaging with history, I think, is the best way to learn history.
And I think I often think when with museums and classrooms of social studies being the clearest connection to the curriculum. But I think sometimes if we broaden our imagination about how museums can connect with curriculum, there's so many exciting opportunities for connection. Before we started recording this podcast, you were talking about when you worked at a museum, you made food and talked about the history of food, and you are also a food science teacher. What are some other ways that you think museums might be able to connect with curriculum?
Yeah, I think that there's so many different things that you can do to engage with students. It doesn't just have to be, here's an artifact that's 200 years old, let's talk about it. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity last year, before everything happened, to go down to Victoria and actually engage in a professional development seminar, which was the Historical Thinking Project that was hosted at the Royal BC Museum. And one of the things that I took away from that was actually a desire in my food studies class to actually take some antique cookbooks and have my students prepare some recipes from the Great Depression or from the turn of the century to look at what were people in high society enjoying dinners or special holidays and stuff. Because if you can sit there and try and make a cake without sugar or butter to emulate what people were trying to do during the Great Depression, it gives you a better understanding of what life was like for people during that time. Learning that something like peanut butter at the turn of the 20th century is one of the most expensive condiments around, and was, you know, specifically used for high society, it gives you a whole different sort of look on something that some students might eat every single day. Curriculum can be engaged with in so many different ways. One of the nice things too that I've seen some students do is even look at things like sports history. I was fortunate enough growing up in Southern Ontario, I used to get to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame about once a year. And not only was I a massive hockey fan, but I was fascinated to see the equipment that goalies used to wear, or the lack of face masks, or the masks they did have that didn't, you know, look like it would be able to stop anything. And even looking at those physical objects in the past and looking at how it compared to the equipment that I was wearing and how it's changed now from hockey sticks to any of the equipment, that was a way that I interacted with history. And I think if museums can look at curriculum and say, students learn best when they're engaged, what's something that we can do that gets students engaged? What's something that we can actually have them physically do? And whether that's food, whether that's through sports. I know that one of my coworkers every year, one of her famous lesson plans is that she recreates trench warfare using desks and paper balls, and she has a whole light show that goes on, and she has war sounds in the background. That's an effective way to get kids connected and involved in curriculum. And so anything that you can do that gets them out of their seats, doesn't have them staring at a board or taking, you know, notes for hours on end, I think anything that gets them engaged is going to be something that improves curriculum.
And for the museums that are doing digital field trips or digital programming, do you have any thoughts or considerations you'd like to share with them on things they should know about or think about?
One thing I will definitely say is touched on is learning styles. You can have this beautiful display with relevant information and everything, but if that's not really the way particular student learns, then it's not really going to hit its mark. If you are doing like digital field trips or any kind of programming, like I said, just really make sure that you're reaching those different learning styles. Have something visual. If there is a lot of information, and again, this is all going to be predicated on grades that you're teaching. Students at a higher level in high school will certainly have, in theory, longer attention spans than students at an elementary level. And I think if you can have written text for students to read and learn from, visuals to engage with, hands-on material, I think you're going to find that it's going to be much more successful, and you might find that it's something that teachers try and utilize more frequently. I think one of the other things, and I'm going to basically pull this from my wife, who, when she has school groups come to her museum, her favorite stories to bring back at the end of the day are always the questions that she got from the classrooms that came in. And if you are going to do digital field trips, I'm going to really recommend that you take the time to answer questions. Because when students are able to express themselves, ask questions, it fosters, I think, a greater interest on their part in what is happening. It engages students on a personal level when they're able to ask questions and get answers. And sometimes they want to tell stories about their grandparents, or maybe an artifact that you're showing at museum is something that maybe their grandparents or an aunt or an uncle still has in their house or in a barn, and they've seen it before. Engaging students on that personal level, I think, goes a long way to improving the programs that museums can offer. Especially if you're doing something like a digital field trip, just making sure that the visuals that you have are, you want to make sure the students are engaged. You want to make sure that there's a certain wow factor, because that's what museums are for, to look at lives and peoples and civilizations that are gone. You want to make sure that there's a lasting impression there. And it's tough because almost every student now has access to the internet, and between YouTube, there's very little that they can't find on their own. And so providing new and relevant information can be tough. And so you need to make sure you do it in a way that students feel engaged, that there's a lasting impression there, maybe a desire to know more, but making sure that there's that personal connection for them as well, I think is something that museums should really keep in mind.
You bring up asking questions, and that made me think of a question. I find, having to do a lot of online meetings, it's really difficult to ask a question that engages people in an online format, because the temptation is you're having a meeting and you say, are there any questions? And then there's silence and everybody looks awkwardly. And then you move on to the next question and then there's more silence. And I think there's a real skill when it comes to asking a question. And as a teacher, you are both the asker of many questions and also have many questions directed to you. And I wondered if you had any experience you could share as people are thinking about how to make engaging online programs. How do you ask a question that people want to respond to?
You ask a question and you get that stare. And I think you talk to any teacher and they'll tell you that's the most dreaded thing in the world is you could think that you've explained everything so perfectly and then you ask the question and you get that blank stare back, like so many deer's cotton headlights. In my experience, it's best not to say, is there a question? Because you're either dealing with two situations. You're either dealing with students who are too afraid to put up their hand for fear of looking stupid or sometimes even worse, it's looking like some sort of teacher's pet. So what I try to do instead is I try to, ahead of time, curate some questions specifically related to the material that we're going over. And sometimes it can be as simple as, and I've commented on the idea of trying to engage them on a personal level, and asking a question like, how do you feel about this? Because it doesn't make it about them having to prove something that they know, it's more explaining how they feel or how they've reacted to information that you've provided them with. And I found that is a really effective tool for trying to get students engaged. And I think once you get that line of questioning going, it tends to bring out better responses once you can sort of get the lines of dialogue going. So I think instead of asking students specifically about something that they're learning about, asking them personal questions about how they're relating to it, or can you relate this to anything else in your life? That kind of thing, I think it's a lot more effective than either just saying, are there any questions? Because there is something worse than just expecting something to start. Maybe you've put 10 minutes of a lesson aside for conversation and for debate or discussion on a topic, and you try to get the ball rolling and you just can't. That's a pretty rough situation to be in. I think giving people the opportunity to express their opinions on stuff too is also a really great way to get the lines of dialogue going. And yeah, it is very tough to find a way to ask questions and get responses from students. I think it can be done. And I think a part of that is just trying to make sure that, and one of the things that I do in my classrooms right from day one is I encourage dialogue in the sense that I try not to be strict or to put this onus on being correct. And that certainly was true when I was teaching math, because I would make probably more mistakes than a lot of the students. And you just got to own up to it. You have to make it fun. You have to show them that when, mistakes or when something happens, if you misspeak, have fun with it. But you're not perfect. You want to try and make sure that your classroom is a relaxed environment where students feel comfortable and safe expressing themselves. And that, I think, is one of the key things that you can do to make sure that if you are trying to get dialogue or discussion going, that's one of the ways to try and do it.
Now, speaking about dialogue and discussion, and this might be a little bit of insider knowledge from you, so I hope you feel comfortable sharing this. Are there hashtags or websites you recommend following to connect with teachers and stay up to date with their needs?
I might not be the best person to comment on hashtags and that kind of stuff. I actually don't really use Twitter myself, but I think that there definitely are a few things that, that museums or teachers do. There are certain people in the teaching world right now that are celebrities. I'll put that word out there. They basically go from district to district and they do talks on how to be a better educator. Shelley Moore is one of those people that I would recommend museums follow on social media. Shelley Moore is, she's a fantastic speaker. She has some wonderful insights into modern pedagogy and the best way to reach teachers. So she's a fantastic example. The other one is, I'm going to relate back to the seminar that I was able to attend back in February. Lindsay Gibson, who's, I think he's an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia. He actually works in the Department of Curriculum and Pedagogy. Lindsay's one of those people that when I was able to speak with him and to work with him at the seminar, he gives off this level of understanding that you could be a teacher for 30 years and a short conversation with Lindsay or even Shelley makes you think, God, there's still so much more that you can learn. And Lindsay did a fantastic job of really highlighting, I think, the importance of how do we teach students history and the different ways that we can do it that not only make it more engaging for them, but make them better critical thinkers of history. And I've really enjoyed reading through some of the stuff that he's done. The historical thinking, I think they do a summer and winter session. I would encourage anyone who is a history teacher, a social studies teacher to try and engage with the historical thinking seminars. They were so well done. The information I found was really relevant, and especially because it was done in coordination with museum curators and programmers, that it did such a wonderful job of bridging that gap between having the resources that you want to share with teachers and being a teacher who might be struggling to find those resources that museums are looking to offer. So those are two people I would definitely say. Shelley Moore, yeah, definitely. Shelley Moore and Lindsay Gibson are two people I would definitely recommend checking out.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that with us.
And that's the last question that we had prepared. Was there anything else that came up in the conversation that you'd like to talk more about, or anything else you'd like to cover?
I think one of the things that I'd like to express is, like I've said, I straddle this world between the education side of things and the museum side of things. And for any of the museum folk who tune into this podcast, I think I want to express that I and I think a lot of teachers know how hard things are going to be going forward. I know how heavily museums rely on those school groups and the physical people coming in as not just a revenue stream when you're applying for grants and that kind of stuff. I know how important it is. And I can only imagine that as a teacher going through this and the frustrations that I feel and how many things are in the unknowns, that the people in the museum world are feeling the exact same way. And I would really encourage them to reach out to teachers. If teachers personally, if you have friends who are teachers, or if you just met them through your travels or through your sort of interactions in your communities, reach out to each other and try and get those lines of communication going, because I think it's going to be really important going forward that museums forge a new kind of identity or a new kind of way that they interact with students. Because as I mentioned earlier, this is our new reality. I don't see us going back to having multiple school groups entering a museum for the foreseeable future. And I think it's going to be really important that teachers and museums and everybody, we start to adapt as quickly as possible, because the last thing that I ever want to see are museums closing their doors or finding that there's no way for them to engage with learners. I think it's going to be so important that together we try and come up with a system that supports one another. And there's going to be a lot of money out there for resources. There's going to be a lot of money that's, you know, not spent on field trips and stuff, that if there's a way that we can come up with systems that museums are still making resources that are accessible, and if they can get something for, that'd be fantastic. So reach out, talk to your teachers. And teachers, if you're listening to this as well, reach out to your museums and see what you can do to help them out, because I think both are going to do so much better if we can find that we can rely on each other. And fingers crossed, one day things go back to normal and we can see ourselves going back into museums and learning and engaging with our curators and our program directors. But in the meantime, I think we need to adapt, and I think we need to find structures that work for everybody.
Thank you so much for your time today, Tom, and your perspective. I know listening to this during the recording, just so many great points and so much to think of. And Lorenda, unless there's any final questions, we can probably thank Tom for his time.
Thank you, Tom, so much for joining us. I also found this to be extremely valuable, and I really appreciate you taking the time to just chat with us. Thank you again.
It was really nice being here. It was lovely talking with you, and hopefully some good comes of interviews like this. It's going to be an interesting year. For all the frustrations, I am looking forward to getting back in my classroom. And I just, the best for everybody. I really do hope that going forward, we start to see some improvements to all of our mental well-being through all of this. So it was really nice talking with you both.